We're being joined now with Stephen Tidwell with Tidwell Industries. And before we get into some of the cost savings, which we're going to talk about, and some of the remediation technology that he has, including some of the boots on the ground work that he does, let's start off by finding a little bit more about Tidwell Industries and Stephen himself. So first off, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Jason. How are you today?
Doing excellent. Hey, it's a great day to be alive and a great day to be in the energy industry, huh?
Yes, sir. It's exciting times.
You know, it truly is. And, you know, let's talk about your company a little bit. You know, I like to start off interviews by giving people a little bit of a plug for their business, you know, talk about who your customer is, talk about who you're trying to connect with, that sort of thing, and then what it is that you do for a service and in order to feed yourself and your family. Go ahead and give yourself a little plug, Stephen.
Yeah, so 15 years ago, me and my father, who were just two farm boys trying to work hard to make a living, we come across a guy that developed a product to stick a insulation to a wood-burning furnace and to hold in the heat so that the heat wouldn't distribute out into the warehouse. The guy had found out that later on it worked on hydrocarbons, so my father, being 20 years with Schlumberger, had just retired, and so he knew quite a bit about it, so we picked it up. And I was right there with him. We pushed it hard, and you know, 15 years later, here we are. Here recently, I've started my own distributorship for everything south of I-10 down south, with the ability to sell, of course, all over the state. But yeah, we built it off of just hard work and reputation. We had first initially started this company off as to be successful on a local level. My father was very successful on that, and as being the son, I had, you know, bigger aspirations, more time to work with, so we looked at doing, you know, bigger and better things with the product. So here we are 15 years later. We've worked for some of the top people in the industry, midstream, upstream, and downstream, and we have a great record with those companies, and I have no doubt that anybody that we do business with would give a personal reference to that quality of work that we do and providing the best products. So that's the company how I got started, and now Tidwell Industries.
Your father, 20 years experience, Schlumberger, spun off, created his own company. You would be second or third generation? I say third because I guess, did your grandfather work in the industry too, or was your father the first one in the oil and gas industry, making you a second generation oilman?
Definitely a second generation, but grandfather was a farmer, somewhat of a business owner at the start, and later became a farmer, provided for the whole family. Great man.
Well, we're going to tie that in a little bit later then, because when we talk about remediation and a few of the other things, I imagine the respect for the land and the roots of farming will definitely be shown in your core if your grandfather was a farmer and your father was an oil man. It sounds to me like you got a good respect for industry and land in terms of just, you know, with your general upbringing. So, Let's get into the interview here a little bit, if you wouldn't mind. The reason we wanted to bring Mr. Stephen Tidwell on was several reasons, but one of the main reasons is, of course, many oil companies out there are always looking at saving money, especially when the oil prices drop down, that sort of thing. And one of the pencil to paper examples that many of us heard how oil companies were saving money was frac sand, whether it be in Illinois or Wisconsin or Arizona, whether they found whatever it was, the frac sand people had to figure out a way to make it a little bit cheaper. And that's well documented. If you go to any industry publication, you can see that's a very popular example. So I wanted to bring everybody another example of how industry and energy companies are finding significant savings, how they're finding ways to become smart, clever capitalists. And we got one with us today. And, you know, it sounds to me like his dad understood the industry, and now he's rolling this in. So let's talk a little bit about how you're saving some money for these oil and gas companies, because that's what they want to know first and foremost. So let's start with that out of the gate, and then we'll backdoor into how you do it next, okay?
That sounds good. Yeah, so the biggest problem with oil remediation or any kind of hydrocarbon remediation in the industry, as most people would know, if you've been in the industry, the number one concern is the cost. Not only the cost to actually remove it, but there's also a big problem with overpricing with certain materials and things like that on the job. So most people know the cost that go into actually doing a remediation. So those the main problems in that are probably going to be mostly with labor and equipment use. So the traditional method of actually remediating a job site would be to dig and haul. It's called the dig and haul method. So that would be the process, which I'll try to paint a picture. So you have a remediation company that will come to a contaminated site. They'll bring generally 15 to 20 guys, maybe a little bit less, and they're going to bring in a bunch of heavy equipment. There in itself, it lies a bunch of problems with moving heavy equipment around gas lines and things like that. But as you can see, that would cost quite a bit of money. So you're using all these men for these long labor hours, this heavy equipment, all the materials that they're going to be overcharging you for and making money off of, plus the packaging of this contaminated material. And next thing would be the transportation of that material, which the moment that you remove a contaminant from a site, you now have a paper trail that you have to keep up with that contaminated material for state regulations. So in, right there, there's extra work that's involved. It's a big situation. Not to mention the moment that the hazardous material is transported to a hazardous dump site. So there you have a really large cost per barrel, per type of material. Each place is kind of different. But they eat up a lot of cost there. So that's been one of the major problems in the industry as far as cost and remediation is concerned. And it's a really big problem. And I think we spearhead that with the product that we have.
Just in the last couple of weeks, I've been interviewing North Dakota Public Service Commissioner Randy Christman, as well as the governor, and Doug Burgum, Lynn Helms. He's the kind of the top regulator, North Dakota Industrial Commission, because we're doing quite a bit on the Bakken. They got some things going on up there. And one of the interesting stories that came out of there was the use of drones, and how a couple years ago they were using crop dusters and all the man hours that went into it and the human element behind it, and how now they're starting to use more UAS and they're getting more precision. And where I'm going with this, when you were describing how you're saving these guys money, these energy companies, that's what I was picturing. I was picturing the integration and the advent of a new technology, whether it be proprietary, whether it be environmental, whatever it is, it's the advent of a new technology. And this is the type of thing that the oil and gas CEOs have been telling me for the last 5 years. Technology is completely changing this industry. And that's what I'm hearing when I hear you talk, is you're integrating a new technology that's coming in that's actually showing that there are results being made. So am I hearing you right, that you're bringing this new technology in? And for all I know, it might be an old technology, but new to the industry. But you're actually seeing that companies are saving money?
Yes, that's right. It is a new product, although we've been in business 15 years. Like I said, we originally started off to be on a local level, so we stayed under the radar. We learned how to grow a business. We learned how to become businessmen. We kind of took some time off the clock for two farmers to learn how to run the business, learn how to use a product of this magnitude. But yes, we are spearheading the industry right now, and that's not just talk, that's not just reputation, that's actual experience. We've been working for some of the top companies, and they still use us 15 years later because of the fact that we saved them money on their costs. There's a whole lot of other benefits that come along with it, such as, taking away the appearance of a spill so that there's nothing there to see. It doesn't cause a whole lot of attraction. So, you know, we're kind of a comfortability measure to the customer. But, yeah, definitely leading the market. And in my opinion, by far, in the last 15 years that I've been here and seeing other products, there's some great products out there. But, you know, I'm happy that I have a product that literally blows them out the water as far as the technology is concerned for this time.
Sticking on environmental and technology, or environmental tech, energy tech was a word they used several years ago as well, but then they found out that the new technology was so environmental friendly, and they kind of hybrided those in there. And that is very important when we're talking about remediation, we're talking about cleanup, reclamation, whatever the word is we want to use, and we're going to use remediation for this. Well, first off, on-site, are you doing on-site? We'll get into the technology part in just a second here, but do you guys do on-site too?
Yes, that's actually problem number two in the top three that I have for remediation industry. It's typically called, or how we use the term, it's in-situ remediation, which is going to be on-site remediation, and that's the process of turning a contaminated spill into a non-hazardous material or deeming it clean to be able to pass the EPA test and actually leave it on-site without having to transport hazardous materials and dump them to another location where they're actually still liable for that oil for the next 25 years. So in-situ remediation, the most common, there's several types of products out there, but the most common, the one that people are going to recognize the most, is going to be a microbial. This is a bug that is instituted into a liquid, which is then dispersed out over an area of contaminated soils or contaminated material. Now, the idea is that these microbes, which are living organisms, they will actually go to the hydrocarbon, find the hydrocarbon, eat it, and digest it out into an inert compound. Now, that, to me, that's amazing in itself, that man was able to take a living organism, inject it into a fluid, and then have that organism there find a hydrocarbon, digest it out into an inert compound. That's, to me, that's amazing. I still find it amazing to this day. But, you know, they're just, that was good for that time. That was great technology for that time. But now, you know, we do have something better in the market. Now, one of the problems for microbial use is, number one, it's a living organism. So you have to keep that living organism alive. So a lot of times if the pH level in the soil is really high, it's going to kill those bugs. And you've wasted a lot of money distributing that microbial on this contaminated site, plus the labor cost that goes involved. And they're going to have to, make another shot at it. So there's a chance it may not even work. But if it is working, it still has to be maintenance. It has to be tilled and sprayed, aerated. A lot of man hours go into it. A lot of heavy equipment use come into it in some cases. But the labor costs go up really high, even though the cost per gallon of the microbial is probably cheaper, where they actually make their money is going to be in the actual labor. So then we get right back into problem number one, which is cost. So we're driving up the cost to the customer, who on a daily basis is trying to find out ways to save money without jeopardizing the quality of work. So that's been a big problem. You can't really be comfortable, or the customer, the oil field companies can't really be comfortable enough to go to a microbial for their remediation needs. Because like I said, there's opportunities that may not work. You got contaminated soil that's left on site for long periods of time where you can run into state fines and it's going to be displayed for everybody to see. So that's another big problem is with the in-situ remediation. So you have the opportunity to dig and haul, and then you have this other opportunity of in-situ remediation. And because of the unstableness of in-situ technology right now, the main thing that people go with is going to be a dig and haul, which is the most expensive thing, but it's the safest, at least as it refers to doing dig and haul versus using a microbial product.
And you said dig and haul, right? Like dig and haul?
Yes. Dig the material up and haul it off to a hazardous landfill.
Okay. A few things I wanted to mention, that whether it's Latchaw Drilling out of Texas, who's got a lot of down in, I think, the Permian and the Eagle Ford down there, or Harold Hamm, of course, out of Continental Resources, they love talking about remediation and bringing the land back better than when they got there. And they take a lot of pride, and other oil companies, too, take a lot of pride in that, trying to leave it better than when they got there. And then, of course, the EPA and some other regulations came in, and then it wasn't as fun anymore, I guess, because there's so much accountability and everything else involved. That's just red tape. That's just nature of the beast. How was your relationship with some of the regulators and that sort of thing? I mean, a lot of times in oil and gas, it's a friend or foe situation, but I see somebody like you coming in as almost like a moderator and almost like a savior in a lot of times for these oil and gas companies who might be in over their head with a spill or something along those lines. Very long-winded way to ask. How was the regulation aspect, the EPA aspect, and your relationship with all of that taken into play here?
Yeah, so the one of the most common issues is bringing a new product into the market. Anybody that's ever had a product, especially one that stands out so much, if you're trying to bring it into the industry, in such a big industry such as the oil and gas industry, it becomes it's strenuous, and it takes a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience, a lot of working, to be able to get to the point where you can talk with the environmental people. That way that they have the knowledge they need, because they have certain regulations and stipulations that they have to go by. And then you have, with your technology, you know what you can do and what you can't do. So it's really educating. That's what we've been doing for the last 15 years, is really educating the environmental aspect of what we do. And which is, you know, we got to have those regulations in place. If you don't, people will get carried away. And you know, we actually enjoy that regulation, being farmers and businessmen and understanding, you know, we do believe in environmental quality. So a lot of that step has been for us just educating the environmental department on our product. So we've had we've had one or two state representatives that were on a job that were probably a little bit too close to the road and had people, you know, that could drive by and see it. So there was an urgency to get it up in a timely manner. Being that our product takes just a little bit of time, on average about 1 to 3 days, to get to the desired look that they want and to be able to potentially pass the test, which we can pass the test up to 2 weeks. I mean, it can go to 2 weeks before we can pass. But some instances, they've been in a situation where they wanted to, they would rather dig and haul, being that it was so close to a road. But any time that we're back off the road and we're not in sight, you know, we have a really good leeway and a really good rapport with the state in passing their regulations. And I'll say this, one of our biggest customers, I won't mention them just for the sake of the remediation aspects, it's kind of hush-hush, but one of our biggest companies that we've done business for quite some time, we went out and did a job for them in a national forest. So the regulations there are going to be a little bit tighter, or actually a lot more tighter. But we went out there, and in one day, we were able to take a large amount of black oily dirt, turn it back to its original color, and put it back in the hole by the end of one day. And that was really hot outside, and the hotter it is, the faster our product is going to work. But the EPA lady came out, she looked at the job, and she literally looked at me in my face and she said, "You think I'm stupid?" And I said, "No, ma'am, I don't know what you're talking about." She said, "Well, you don't think I don't know that you brought in new dirt here and put it right back in place? That dirt hasn't been touched. Now, you probably just leveled it off," is what she said, because you could see the scrapes and everything in where we leveled it back. But she said, "You know, this is new dirt that y'all brought in." So she took a 5-gallon bucket of some contaminated soil. We told her to take the product and work with it on her own. She took it actually to her home. She worked with it. On the second day, there was a little bit of a change to the color of the soil. On the third day, she had a rain, filled the bucket up, but there was no oil floating on the top. There was no sheen on the top. but it still had a coloration actually in the soil. But on the third day, when it dried out, it was really hot on the third day, it dried out, and the soil went back to the original color. So we picked up there. That's how we teach. You know, you can give as much paperwork as you want, but until you actually get there and show them and let them mess with it, let them work with it to get to the desired point that passes their standards. So it's their standards. So if we pass them, there's no issue.
Stephen Tidwell, Tidwell Industries, talking about innovative product, way energy companies are saving money, putting pen to paper and that sort of thing. And this is one of the examples where they're using for remediation and some other ways to clean and be environmentally friendly, EPA. So you're actually kind of like EPA certified then through a 5-gallon bucket, huh?
In my eyes, yes, but definitely not in the EHS world. But in my eyes, yeah, you know, I feel like I know quite a bit, but not near as much on the standards they are, but I know what I need to know.
All right. Let me ask you about maintenance. That's a huge thing in the oil and gas world, whether it's from a customer service standpoint, whether it's from a boots on the ground. Maintenance, there's so much of the roots of the industry involved with that. Where are we at nowadays, and what does your company do when it comes to that word maintenance in the oil and gas sector?
Yeah, so that would be number three. But in order for me to go into number three there, let me go back a little bit into in-situ remediation. We talked about the microbials, what the issues were using microbials. So let me just give you a solution as to what we do to combat our solution for in-situ remediation. So when we go to a job, we dig the contaminated soil from its spot. We take it to a clean spot on the location. Now, this is done with tops, three guys. So there's not a lot of labor that's out there taking up cost, or actually the more guys you have out there, the more safety concerns that you have, et cetera. But we're able to go with tops, three guys. Most of the time it's two. But we take that contaminated soil out from where it's at. We put it on a clean spot of the location. We run it out on a stretch so that we can run through it with a tiller and spray. And we'll typically spray about five times. So we need enough of our product versus the hydrocarbon that's in the soil. So the first actual step is really just chilling through the contaminated soil and spraying our product to get enough coverage. So we'll do that typically about five, maybe six times. Once we get to that coverage that we need, the rest of the time is just running it through with a tiller and getting the soil to dry out. So typically, our average job time is really in between 1 to 3 days. So a microbial is going to take, I think the best I've heard is 2 weeks. But the worst that I've heard has been 6 months, or actually the worst being it not working at all. So we got a long period of time there. We got a lot of labor costs. Whereas if we go out there, we're digging the contaminated soil up. Most of the time, the digging part takes the whole part of the first day. The second day, we're tilling and spraying until we get that desired look. Sometimes we get it back in the hole that day, but you know it could go about 3 days on average. But we're taking contaminated hydrocarbon soil, and our product actually attaches to that hydrocarbon, and it binds to it. The only way that you can break that apart is to be in a lab-type setting with a real heavy acid or maybe 800 degrees that would actually break that bond down. But once our product attaches to that hydrocarbon, it won't release it, even in water. So we actually do spills. We clean up spills on water, which it works great, too, there. But once it makes that bond to that hydrocarbon, it's not going to be broken down. So the next question I usually get from the EPA is, well, on that byproduct, can you mechanically break it down? So what I usually tell them is I got 15 years of experience. And whenever I bring that contaminated soil out and separate it out and clean it, I'm pounding that dirt with that tiller at least 200 times. And I'm putting that dirt through its most rigorous process it's ever going to see in its lifetime. But during that process, we still get to the soil going back to the original color and put back in the hole and passing the EPA. Test anywhere from 3 days to 2 weeks. 2 weeks being our latest test, but it won't. That ought to tell you there that it's not going to break loose that hydrocarbon, And in the 15 years that we've been doing this, not one time have I ever had to go back to a job because we had a leaching problem, or maybe they drug a compressor across some dirt that we had treated before and pressure caused to release that hydrocarbon. That's never happened. And you know, I typically explain to people, by tilling that soil and it's still going back to the original color and passing the test, there's no way that you're ever going to have a problem down the road. You know, 10, 20 years from now, it's still going to be a sand particle in the soil that you'll never even see it. So we eliminate that process of the in-situ remediation being a troublesome area. We're actually now making it comfortable for the customers to actually go to in-situ remediation with confidence and still save them a lot of money without jeopardizing the quality of work. We get to the same position. As a matter of fact, when we leave the location, it looks like a brand-new location. But having said that, I just wanted to clear that up on the in-situ remediation. That's how we solve that issue. The next issue that you mentioned, that would be the maintenance side. I labeled it maintenance because of the fact that these are small spills that will happen normally inside plants, compressor stations, things like that. But there's generally, the plants are generally made up of rock and concrete. That's the majority of the material that they have on the ground in these locations. So a lot of times they'll have a skid run over or something like that out onto rock. And what happens is the hydrocarbon will seep down into that rock, the pores of that rock, and it's really difficult to get out. And if anybody's ever messed with oil in any kind of the oil field and getting it on concrete, they realize this is a really big problem. And it's really difficult to get out of that concrete without, or you can get it out with using another hazardous material, but you still have something there you have to pick up. So you have man hours, so we run back into a cost problem. But these little spills, they tend to grow and grow and grow, but once they get to a certain point, the plants, the maintenance people, literally pick up the contaminated soil or the contaminated rock, and they will pile it up in a certain location on that plant until it gets too big to where they have to do something with it. So then we go back to the dig and haul method, which is they pretty much just haul it off. It's already dug up, but they haul it off, and they're still at expensive cost there. So that's a big problem, is just with the maintenance side. The lower side, that they spend a lot of money on surfactants and things to break apart the hydrocarbon to be able to clean it off. But you have a runoff now, so there's still an issue there to pick up. So where we come into play is there's not a problem after you've gotten the job done. So when we remove that from the concrete or the rock, we've actually taken care of the hydrocarbon, and there's nothing else left to do. We cut out all the man hours, we cut out all the cost, expensive time, and the headache of even dealing with it. One guy can go out in the plant with a garden sprayer and spray these spots that I'm talking about, and they can clean it up themselves. That's one man going through the whole plant and get the plant back to a state where the regulation people come in, the safety people come in, and they clear you. One of our first jobs, or actually first plant that we got, they got us to come in 2 weeks before an inspection. Now, we came in there, we cleaned that whole plant. This plant had many citations for not keeping up their plant and having oil everywhere. So 2 weeks we went in, we actually cleaned the whole plant. The day that safety guy came in to do his report, ran through the whole plant and came back to the plant manager, and he said, "I don't know what you're using, but whatever it is, you better keep using it." And that was about 11 years ago, and they still buy from us. It's a really small plant. They have some issues, so they spend quite a bit of money each year. And we're talking about 11 years of spending money on this product because it does so much for them.
Got a little ahead of myself when you said dirt and haul. I got started thinking about equipment, so I wanted to ask you about the maintenance, because you talked about ground, you talked about water spills, and you just mentioned concrete, so I'm glad you brought it to another one. I was going to ask you about equipment, because I think about those big machines, whether it be, you know, trucks or heavy machinery, or a lot of times, you know this, I mean, the oil pads are full of all kinds of machines, and they seem to get dirty, greasy, that sort of thing. Do you get into that whole vein of things, or is that totally a different niche industry within itself?
I think it's something new. Of course, it's going to work on any hydrocarbon. We have at certain times we have messed with asphalt trucks to try and break that apart on their dump side or the dump side of the truck. So that being a real tacky type hydrocarbon, it generally takes a real heavy acid to break that apart. So, and with our product being environmentally friendly, you know, we typically don't work on things like that. But if it's tools, or if it's, you know, if it's hydraulic oil, if it's just oil running down on something, yeah, I mean, it would work in the same aspect. Sometimes you want to dilute it down a little bit more to use on that type of application. But yeah, certainly is useful in that industry. That is something that we are starting to dive into. But we've been primarily focused on soil remediation and now the maintenance side in the plant. But this is definitely an add-on, and I'm sure there'll be many more on top of that, many uses on top of it to come.
Yeah, and we'll stick to the meat and potatoes. It's nice you're recognizing that there's some potential for some offshoots of revenue if you know, during your downtime and that sort of thing. It sounds to me though like some of the conversations we had before this interview, you're getting some good business. It sounds like you got some good clients. You mentioned a few names to me. I don't know if you feel comfortable dropping their names here on this interview. You mentioned referrals earlier. That's why I bring it up. But it sounds to me like there's some good activity, some good positivity happening within the industry. You've got some good business, but like most people, you're always looking for more. But at the same time, you've got some good customers you need to take care of too. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, your current state of business. And, you know, if you feel like dropping a few of those referral names, I'd gladly take them on the program because I know who they are. And I love dropping names from time to time. So I'll take the name dropping stuff instead of you. But go ahead.
Jason, as we talked before, we had talked about getting those references. And, you know, it's a really sticky issue to try to get a reference on this issue. If it was anything else, if it was changing out pipe or putting in tanks or oil field construction, yeah, we would have a long list of people that would come on your show and gladly give a rapport of our company and our services. But realistically, in the business that I'm in this type of business with remediation, it's a hush-hush type business, and I would not want to put my customers out into the public like that. I mean, that's their choice. I don't see anything wrong with it, but that's not my company. So I'd rather keep them kind of, you know, where they want to be. But as far as companies, I mean, we work for, you know, the top five energy companies in the world. We have a lot of compressor companies. We have a lot of gas companies. One of our major clients is a major gas company, pipeline company. And now we're actually moving into the plants, like I said, and we're moving into some pretty large plants. They're really hard to get into. And like I said, we're kind of really just getting out and trying to expand nationwide and getting a name for ourselves. So these type deals take a good amount of time to close and get to that desired end. But yeah, man, we're growing really fast right now. We're teaching people as they learn. They're going actually and selling the product for me. I actually did a demo last week for a gas company to create this one application on some rock. They had some black rock, and the guy went over to the desired spot that he wanted me to spray, which was just fully black rock. And he drew a line in that section of rock there, and he said, "Now, I want you to spray that one spot right there." So to me, I already know that this is just saying, okay, well, if your product really works, I'm going to draw a line here, and I want to see that specific spot turn colors. So I sprayed it down. It was actually kind of misting, raining at the time, but when I went to the job interview, or not job interview, but the demo interview or presentation, the maintenance guy came to me, or the plant manager came to me and said, "Steve," he said, "you got about 10 minutes. I hope you can get everything done in 10 minutes. And I said, "Sir, I'll take you 10 minutes, and that's plenty of time for me." So I went in there. They had their environmental people that was there. And needless to say, what was supposed to take 10 minutes took 2 hours. And I had the environmental people out there with me in hard hats and glasses and FRs and everything watching me spray the product. So I called them yesterday morning. I asked the lady, you know, did you have any results so far out of what you sprayed? And she said, Steve, they absolutely love it. And she sent me a picture of the spot that where the guy drew a line there. And, man, even I was so shocked. And I've been doing this 15 years, and that's the greatest thing about what I love about this company and this product is that I get to experience something that I can say wow every day. I get that wow factor every day, and not only do my customers get it, but I still get it. It never gets dull for me. And seeing that photo where the rock actually went back to regular rock, looked like they put new rock in there. So they were just astounded about it. Now this environmental lady is actually going to all their other plants to sell the product for me. And she's pushing it for me. That's how much they really love the product. And, you know, this is the case with most of our customers. They love it so much that they're willing to go out and sell this product for us. We don't do business illegally. We don't pay anybody any profits. We just do good business. And they love it so much that they're willing to help us further in that company to get up to the top levels of the company. And that's where we're starting to get.
You know, that's good to hear, too, because I wanted to mention that, you know, when I asked the question originally, I didn't think about this, but as you were giving your answer, I thought that some people listening might think right away that, okay, we're talking about spills and cleanups and that sort of thing. So, of course, people don't want to know when it happens. Well, actually, the industry is pretty okay with it. They know that happens. They do a good job of cleaning up. What they're more concerned about is all the proprietary property involved, and not only in reverse engineering and companies like yours that are, you know, great saviors and that type of thing, where they don't mind giving a referral to a company down the road. Like you were mentioning at the end of your statement, they'll gladly go sell your business all day long as, you know, you're a respectable company and that sort of thing. But coming publicly on shows like this, because we've asked a lot of different companies, anything to do with this line, it just seems like there's so much intellectual property and so much respect for that involved. That seems to be the main reason why they're a little reluctant, I guess. Is that what your experience has been, or has it been other things?
Yeah, I think so. I think it draws attention, and I think the remediation side draws so much attention. There's so much consequences in what you're actually doing. When we're talking about state fines and lawsuits and everything else, you know, accidents happen. And there are, as long as you have oil, as long as you have gas, you're going to have spills. But nobody wants to be connected to them because of the consequences at the end of it. And, you know, I think for us, you know, we want to build relationships with our customers, not just sell them a product, not just give them a service. But we want to build relationships, and building relationships means, you know, they last a long time. So, you know, we make money out of that, but, you know, it's the relationship that means the most to us, and that's providing, you know, the customer with the highest quality products, the best quality work for the best price to save them money. Because if I can't give them something, anybody can come along and take what I've got. Can take that relationship away by providing them something. So we provide them with what I think you can't take away from our company. So, you know, that's where we try to keep respect there between the customer and the remediation side, even though we're all for the environment and doing what we need to do and the minimum or the least disturbance to soils is possible. You know, we're all for that. But we're also for the customer and respecting their needs and wishes. And I think it's just such a touchy subject for right now. But that's what we're actually spearheading that also. I mean, there's so much that goes into what we're doing and on this side of remediation is to try to blend in a mutual respect between the state regulations or the state EPA with the actual oil field companies. And if we can provide a medium there, where people can open up and talk about this and talk about that or make it public, because you have products like we have right now, you know, we can tackle the issue, and we can help with these problem areas as far as properties and stuff like that that are affected by these fields. I mean, if you have a product like this, we can go there immediately. We can change the soil back into a sand, basically a non-hazardous sand particle, and leave it there as if nothing ever happened, and you never have a problem with it again. So we tackle those issues, but you know, there's still a long stretch to go, and I think we're moving to a place where we can actually talk about those things, and the companies be open about it, and the state, you know, come together and work together.
Oh, and I completely agree. One of the things that we take a lot of pride on our program is we're trying to be a bridge for not only the industry and other industries, but also those people that are retiring over the next 5 to 10 years and those people that are coming in. Because the energy industry, you need to have an understanding of the respect that's involved with a lot of this thing. And I'm going to give you an example here, kind of what we're talking about. One of the things that I took away from my interview with North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum was he issued a challenge to the oil and gas industry in the Bakken, saying number two was zero spills. And, you know, he said, you know, that's pie in the sky type of a thing, but it's a goal. And it's, you know, the airline industry had zero crash and that sort of thing. He goes, so at least we can go to that. And he brought up a very good point. And the numbers are going to be different than what the interview were, but the point is the same. You could have a two-barrel saltwater waste spill happen in some wherever, and that will get national news because the word spill, and it's the oil industry. Yet the company like yours coming in with new innovative things that are solving problems that have really existed since the aquifers were invented, you know, because we've got quite a bit of innovation. His background's technology, so he's all about in energy tech and everything. But the fact that the media and will get so caught up on the word spill and demonizing as opposed to having intellectual, productive discussions, conversations, and news. And that's what we try to do here. So I thank you for coming on actually to talk about these types of things, because you're right. This is not an easy topic for the industry to talk about, but it's becoming easier because of companies like yours that have these new innovative solutions to take care of actually a lot of times a problem before anybody even finds out about it or knows about it because it happens so quick. So are you, I don't know, you got anything to say to that, or am I just kind of blathering on here?
No, actually, I think you bring a good point. As we had talked about before, the older generation oil field and the newer generation oil field. And there is a lot of butting heads there. And if I'm getting you correctly, this is on the same subject with the, you know, the older generation and the newer generation, correct?
Yeah.
So, it's really difficult, you know, in the industry. I've been in 15 years, so I definitely know about this. I started from, you know, pushing a shovel, and I did it for a long time, so I worked up under a lot of guys that have been in the industry for such a long time. And, you know, I've learned something along the way, and that is that there's growth on both sides. You know, you can take all the experience in the world, but if you're not willing, once you have that experience, to come back to a lower level to be able to learn more, then you're never going to grow again. You're never going to grow more than where you were. And the same aspect is for the newer generation is, you know, you may have the innovative products, you may have innovative technology, you know, innovative other situations, you know, that you can advance the oil field in, but there's still something about having those basic, hardworking mentality, I guess, that the old school oil field has. And I think if you mesh them in together, you have a really strong industry. And I say that because of me and my father. He was the older generation in the oil field and did things the hard way. I came in and, you know, whether it been because I was lazy at first, maybe, but I wanted to do things in an easier way, still get to the same desired end that he got to, but I did it, you know, in a more timely manner. So, you know, if you can if you can take those aspects and work together, you know, man, it just really builds the economy, and, you know, everybody benefits from it. If you can make a stronger, more stable, technology-driven, labor-driven industry and work together, you know, you really do something for the industry.
I always tell the younger generation to, you know, the oil industry likes to have a little more patience on things, so make sure you sleep on it before you tweet it out.
Definitely.
Anyway, so Stephen Tidwell, Tidwell Industries, any final thoughts you might have, anything that you want to reiterate, anything that we missed, anything that you think that we should bring up and talk about, just kind of in conclusion, final thoughts, wrapping up a little bit here, just kind of, I guess the floor is yours, sir.
Well, I think we've gotten into the major problems, and specifically in my industry and what we do. I think we tackled those, you know, pretty good, and I think we gave the solutions in presenting our product and what we do and tackling those issues and actually transforming, and as I told you before, we're revolutionizing in situ remediation and opening up a whole new comfortability level for companies to come in and do more business in their in situ side of remediation. But other than that, man, I would just say to anybody that's listening right now, if you've liked what you heard or if it's caught your attention, I always tell people, you know, sometimes it sounds like a magic product and sometimes I oversell it. But the truth is, it's not a magic product. It is, however, the best product in the market, and I think it will be for years to come. But it's not magic. It don't always work exactly like you want it to. Or as far as, you know, some people expect to just spray it on the spot, the next day they want to go out there and see it gone. Well, it really doesn't work that way. I wish it did. You know, I wouldn't have to do this interview. I would be on a golf course somewhere, you know, enjoying some peace and quiet. But, you know, that's not reality. But it is the best product in the market, and we love the competitive questions. You know, we like the idea of being able to go in and prove ourselves. So, if you have listened to the program and it's something that you're interested in, maybe you have some spots. But I always tell my customers, look, if you're on the edge, just give me your worst spot. Give me a spot to clean up. Let me clean it up. If you don't like it, you know what? You don't pay for it. You don't pay none of my expenses. I come in, I do my thing. If you don't like it, I get out of your hair and get out of the way because I know you're busy. But I'm 100% confident. You give me an opportunity, we'll sell you. We'll close the deal that day on the demo.
Yeah, like you say, you might sound like you're overselling it, but you know what? Second generation oil man, been doing it for 15 years. I think you probably know what you're talking about. So let's give people, how can they get in touch with you? You got a website, any social media that you want to mention? If you want to give out a contact number, feel free. Websites are usually the easiest. Of course, we'll have all of the links available at thecrudelife.com. But how can people get in touch with you if they want to know more information or do some business with you, for crying out loud?
Yeah, so the website is www.tidwellind.com. Also, the main manufacturer website would be daystarenviro.com. That's daystarenviro.com. Contact information would be 225-603-2594 for me. And my email would be steve@tidwellind.com.
And like I said, we'll have all of that information available at The Crude Life, as well as this interview and other features involving this environmental awesome product, as well as some other cost-saving measures happening in the oil and gas industry. And Stephen Tidwell with Tidwell Industries, one of the great success stories happening right now in oil and gas, and talking about ways they're saving money for the oil and gas industry, some of the new technology happening with on-site remediation, environmental technology, environmental tech, that sort of thing. So thank you very much, sir, for your time today, and hopefully we'll be talking down the road, okay?
Hey, Jason, thanks for having me, bud.